Mikey, Sam Nation here live, somewhat live, from the Sam Nation studios in an undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain. It is the 7th of June, which means summer is upon us today, literally, because it's my kids' last day of school and they're out for the summer. So kind of an exciting time. And also terrifying time, because if you're a parent, you know this. When they let your kids loose, what happens? You're responsible for them, right? So then suddenly you become their. I don't know. It's a lot to do over the summer to keep three kids busy, out of trouble, and somewhat productive. So that's my poor wife will have her hands full now. Did Biden just lose the race? No, what the F? If you didn't hear about this, Biden one day, what was it, yesterday? No, day before, Wednesday, he gets up and he says, no, I would not push as president for the repeal of the Hyde Amendment. And then reversed himself yesterday. Now, the Hyde Amendment, you know what this is. This is the deal that was struck after Roe v. Wade was decided by the Supreme Court and abortion became legal in all 50 states. And this amendment, pushed forward by a congressman from Illinois who was a Republican guy, got this amendment passed, basically says that federal funding, Medicaid, right, can't be used to pay for abortion. And it has existed more or less in that form ever since that time. And it's the Hyde Amendment's important because it's the detente of the abortion debate, if you will. Okay. Yeah, because on one extreme, you've got the abortionists who are obsessed with aborting anything and everything in sight. On the other hand, are people. The other extreme, of course, are the pure pro-life crowd that to absolutely no abortion anytime. But a vast majority of Americans are in the soft, squishy middle. They don't like abortion. And the compromise, the political compromise really is, okay, all right, fine. If you really, that's something you want to do. I don't want my tax money spent on that. And it is a. And it, by the way, was upheld by the Supreme Court. So, again, the libs, the abortionists challenged this law that was passed in Congress, I think 76 or 77. At any rate, the Supreme Court upheld it, and it has remained law ever since. Now, right, so Biden had this opportunity in the sea of Democratic kookery to stand out as the moderate, reasonable, middle America voice. And I always, in this show, in recent weeks, months, have proposed to you that Biden's the guy that is most likely to be successful if he gets through the primary, certainly most successful in challenging Trump, because he is the least kooky and least extreme of all the Republicans out there, Democrats out there, excuse me. And but what he gave in to the mob. He literally gave, because what happened, he gets up there, he says, I would not repeal the Hyde Amendment. And the abortionist, freak, extreme, nutso part of the Democratic Party, of the political left in this country, went bananas. And they got Biden to reverse himself. Now, yeah, for one, politically, it's a weak move, right? You never reverse yourself like this in a tremendous about face one day to the next. It's never a good look. It's better to be wrong than to be weak, they say, and that's a truth. The other part of it is it shows, by the way, it shows how afraid rank and file Democrats, and I count Biden in there. You know, just say he's a party guy. He's a not a crazy leftist, but how afraid these moderate Democrats are, rank and file Democrats within the party, of the fringe lunatic left. And this is not a good sign, because it's really not even just about Biden. It's not just about Biden. What effect does this have on the primaries? The effect it has is that every other candidate in the race, Pete Buttigieg or, you know, Amy Klobuchar or Warren Sanders, whoever, right? They all look at this. And there had to have been yesterday a collective gulp, because unless you really are the fringe lunatic left candidate. So, like Mr. No Chance, de Blasio, Bill de Blasio out of New York, right? He threw his hat in a couple weeks ago. And he believes all this stuff, right? He is the fringe lunatic left candidate, or one of a few of them. And so unless you're him, guess what? You're looking at this and going, I cannot moderate. I will not be able to moderate until probably, you know, about a week before the Democratic convention. And that's important, folks. Understand why this is important, because then Trump can moderate today. Trump can moderate in a week. Trump has all this time to, one, show everybody that he is, for all the criticism thrown at him, for all the investigations and everything, still the president. He's still presidential. He's getting things done. The economy's great. As far as geopolitical standing, we're solid. All the predicted horrible outcomes that the media and their Democratic cohorts predicted would occur, right? None of that happened. And contrast that with a petri dish of Democratic candidates who are all screaming over each other to claim the mantle of most progressive, because they're fearing that they're going to have the mob destroy them. They literally looked at Biden and saw how the mob destroyed him. And that is what we witnessed today. So mathematically, where the standings are, Biden's down a little bit, still has a big lead. And I want to caution you about all of these polls, because I know all the pollsters out there, there's a poll circulating that shows all the battleground states that Trump won, right? Let's say like Florida and Michigan, for example, where in Florida, Trump actually tied with his favorability numbers. His favorable unfavorable is still tied with where it was on election day in 2016. But for the most part, everywhere else, it's down. I have a question for you. When you're looking at these kind of polls and you begin to despair, you begin to hand-wring because you think, oh, look at this. Look at that map. Everywhere that Trump won, and these are states, you know, these are states mathematically, he has to win. So what does this mean? And I ask yourself this question. Is it possible, if these polls, let's say, are 100% accurate, is it possible that there are people out there who are not satisfied with Trump but may end up voting for him? See, the answer to that question is yes. Of course. Well, let me. You've never complained about a restaurant and then gone back the next week? Folks, we're a year and a half away. I mean, not to belabor the point, but the man's got some time. And it could get worse. Things, certain calculations, political calculations can work out or not. 6 months from now, we could be coming out of a trade war with China that sees a great deal in place that cements Trump's stature as a leader and negotiator. On the flip side, very well could all be in a very worse place than we are now, and that, of course, would affect his standing as well. But the bigger point is, when you ask somebody, do you approve or disapprove of the job Trump is, a lot of people will say disapprove, But then when it's Pete Buttigieg, or if it's Amy Klobuchar, or if it's Pocahontas, right? They might stay home. But the people that came out for Trump are still going to come out for Trump. And I think the people that were on the fence may sit it out, but there's not going to be a lot of excitement for the Democratic candidate either. So this conversation about abortion, it's almost, I don't know. I don't think it's a concerted effort, but I think that the Democrats are falling into a very nifty trap that the Republicans are laying. So these states, right, you've got Missouri, Alabama, others who have passed these restrictive abortion laws. We talked about it the other week. One thought I had is it's really activating the base, liberal base of the Democratic Party, excuse me, into being vocally pro-abortion. And this is just a friendly kind of a Sam Nation pointer here for the Democrats. The abortion might be a great topic for your party faithful. Abortion might be a wonderful way for you to raise money from your stalwarts. But going into a general election, a presidential election, and being the party of abortion is kind of not a good place to be. And you're getting baited into it. If I were the Democratic Party, the talking point would be, this is decided law going back to Roe v. Wade, and these laws are unconstitutional and the courts will deal with it. Next. Instead, we got these big pro-abortion protests, and it's forcing a lot of people, by the way, a lot of people have forgotten about how graphic abortion is. And I spend a lot of time on social media and on the news scouring things as I prepare for the show every week. And my impression generally is there's a lot more stuff out there now than I have seen compared to a year ago, right? A lot more posts that are graphic and shocking. My prediction actually is that there are people on balance probably being swayed in favor of pro-life than pro-choice in this debate. And the Democratic Party really risks losing hearts and minds. They think they've got a lock on it because, of course, Democrats are always in their own echo chamber. They think that just their reality is the reality. But we all know it comes from depths of delusion and sometimes even a modicum of despair. So they think that they are so right on this, but there's a lot of people out there in America who are not religious. They don't go to Sunday school every week. They don't maybe even believe in God. But, seeing a video of abortion workers playing with aborted fetuses that look like little babies is, I saw that this week. No, I saw that. I guarantee you there are a lot of people out there who are pro-choice who saw that video and are thinking about it. And why is all of that stuff out there? It's out there because the left went ballistic in response to these states that passed these laws that are on their face unconstitutional. The left went ballistic and they went out there shaming, and you're a man, you can't make decisions about my body, and blah 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 blah. They went down there, Disney, we're not going to make movies here. All these big corporations, and they're just, it's like the left cannot help itself. They have to always get caught in these traps that are laid out for them. And this, if it wasn't a trap by design, it was one hell of a trap by accident. All right, Sam Rojofsky here, plowing through the program. Yes, I will get to the YouTube thing. If you haven't been following this, a noted commentator slash rabble rouser was demonetized on YouTube the other day. And this follows a whole line of other conservative voices that have met with a similar fate. Let me tell you, you might be surprised with what I think. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, welcome back. All right. Freedom of speech and this YouTube controversy here. let me start here. Because I think this whole problem, the genesis of it, the relevant genesis of this goes back to when we were talking about safe spaces at colleges. By the way, those safe spaces are still there. We've just stopped talking about it because there's other issues, and we're all getting kind of bored of making the same criticism over and over again. But as you know, the dominant thinking now among elite institutions of higher education is that these young students, these pupils that are attending university, chosen as the cream of the cream, the top of the top of their graduating classes across high school, from high schools across America, are somehow incapable. Well, it's not even a matter of incapable. They should not be expected to hear anything that might make them a bit uncomfortable. Now, of course, we know that this is nonsense because you're taking young adults in the most crucial time of their lives, a time of their lives where really intellectual development, intellectual stimulation, right, development, and also their own sense of what is right and wrong, right, in society is being developed. And sometimes you can't get a sense of what's wrong unless you see something that's wrong. It's like food. If the reason we give our kids all sorts of different things and we take them out and we make them try different things, it's okay in our household if one of our kids says we don't like it. We actually have a thumbs up, thumbs down rule. So they will say, "What do you think?" They tried something new. And, you know, we'll have Vera, you know, stick her thumb up. Or sometimes she'll do one of these little, like, thumb in the middle, you know, kind of like a little wobbler. Or she'll give, a thumbs down. That's okay. You don't have to like it. So you're on a college campus and some guy's, you know, starts praising Adolf Hitler. You don't have to like it. But in life, right, in life, the most important thing, folks, is not creating an environment for yourself that is free of irritation. The most important thing is developing yourself in a way that allows you to cope with it, to be able to absorb, deflect, have bounce off of you other people's insanity. You can't let what other people do affect you. And this is an interesting thing as it relates to social media, because the social media companies now are trying to, you know, basically create that environment, or at least this is what they're saying openly. They're trying to create this environment where they are making it a safe space for everybody involved. Honestly, the one takeaway, if there is any at all, is that it's 100% BS. That line, don't believe it. Because it wasn't true when the university said it either. There is no way that the most intelligent, accomplished deans who are, you know, elevated professors at Harvard, for example, or at Princeton or at Yale, truly believe that the way to develop somebody's brain intellectually is to keep them sheltered in a safe space. No, what this is all about is that liberals do not want to hear conservative ideas. They are so convinced that their world is the right view that they themselves don't want it. They don't even want. Well, and there's also a tacit acknowledgement, right, that they can't. Their ideas don't hold up when challenged, so they don't want their ideas challenged. They figure, I got 3 hours, 4 hours a day with these young nincompoops in my class, and I've got to teach them the glories of socialism in those 3 hours. And hell's bells, I mean, the last thing I need is the conservative club on campus inviting, you know, Ben Shapiro and having him tell these kids that I'm an idiot. I don't want that. So that's you've got that happening on the college campuses. And the story that broke with YouTube this week really comes down to the fact that Vox Media, which is this, you know, left wing media outlet, had a thing for the guy that got demonetized. Right. The show that was out there, Louder with Crowder, that was out there. That got demonetized. He was going out and specifically targeting videos that Vox was putting out, and he was taking them apart. He was attacking them logically, and he made an enemy out of Vox Media, and Vox Media put a mob together and forced YouTube to pull the plug. Now, when somebody gets demonetized, do you know what this means? It basically means that they're not making any money off of the stuff they're putting on YouTube. And so they can't put ads up. Effectively, it's a death sentence. You know, I have a day job. I do this thing, this podcast, you know, once a week. And we do the program. We do it for you. And we're very fortunate in that, you know, we're not dependent on any overlords. Right. But it is for these guys that are on, you know, have these shows on YouTube and elsewhere. They're relying on the income, and their independence is only as strong as their ability to live without the money that they derive from these various sites. So I'll give you my thoughts on this, because as you know, I've always thought that, you know, these are private companies; they can do as they wish. But I think we're at an interesting time, and I think we're in an interesting place. And so let's discuss this some more. I got to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rogowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. All right. You know, I loved the statement that you two put out. I'm going to read this to you because this, Crowder's program had been cut from advertising, YouTube was forced to give an explanation for it. And it turns out the show didn't violate any of YouTube standards. And I always say this is a problem, because you have to define what your standards are and then follow those standards. And let me read to you here the pertinent part of their response. It says, even if a creator's content doesn't violate our community guidelines, we will take a look at the broader context and impact. And if their behavior is egregious and harms the broader community, we may take action. In the case of Crowder's channel, a thorough review over the weekend found that individually, the flagged videos did not violate our community guidelines. And then it goes on to say that basically, blah, blah, blah. We saw the widespread harm to the YouTube community resulting from the ongoing pattern of egregious behavior. Took a deeper look and made the decision to suspend monetization. So what does it sound like happened there? Easy. Didn't violate any rules. They said, nothing we can do. But the mob, organized by Vox Media and their various other cohorts, such as Media Matters, another basically, well, yes, they're media terrorists is what they are. They will find clips out of context and look to burn people, and they go after advertisers on that advertise on Fox News and picket them and organize boycott. Horrible, right? So these people got their way. They got their way because they screamed, they hollered, they yelled, they shouted. And you know the worst part about all of this is that the people that are screaming and shouting are pretty vile themselves. One of the guys goes by Gay Wonk. This is not a slamming him or anything. He goes by this. His name is Carlos Mazza. He's the ringleader of this whole thing. I can't even read this. It's a family program. These are some of his tweets. He calls somebody a Jew face. Not making this up. It's a tweet from 2014. Called somebody a slur like that, and it made a reference to, I guess, penises. What else? He's the guy who's threatening. He wants Trump supporters to be hit with milkshakes. So he's advocating people throw milkshakes at people, which in fact happens right at these protests. The point being is Republicans, conservatives, we don't get outraged the way the left does. The left plays the outrage card in order to get its way. Have you grown up? I did not, but I have a great sister. But I had, you know, I had friends who had siblings. There's the one sibling that reasons with their parents and does what they're told, and then there's the other sibling who unreasonably pitches a fit, and invariably the parents have to accommodate the child. And what it builds over time is a tremendous amount of resentment, no? Because over time, the accommodations to the loud, obnoxious child take away opportunity from the child that does everything right. Now, I'm not talking about Crowder or anybody else who is being criticized as doing everything right. There's things that he does on a show that I don't do here, and it's not my style. And it's not my thing. But I'm talking about those of us who are out there that are consumers of media as conservatives. We're doing it. If we don't like something, what happens? We post a nasty comment, maybe, and move on. Or we turn it off. But it's these babies on the left that can't win the debate, and they have to scream and they have to shout. And the greatest irony is that they are the Nazis and the fascists of our era. Because, of course, fascism couldn't survive on its own, so they had to burn everything in sight that might possibly not be congruent with their own ideology. And that, my friends, is where we are. So, I would, by the way, I like Crowder's case. As an attorney, I would take it. And I think that's the first step for this. Because as you know, the Supreme Court a long time ago has ruled that shopping centers and other places that are open to the public are public squares. And this case goes all the way back 3 decades. So it's established law, but it's public squares and you got to open up your and we have this in California here, right? Our very left-wing state. We believe very courts and liberals believe very strongly that private property ought to open up, be forced to open to accommodate other people's opinions or people that we didn't necessarily as owners operators of our premises want on our property. And I'm going to say this. I think if the law forces here in California, for example, if the law forces us as or a property owner of accepting, I don't know, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, Jehovah's Witnesses, whomever, to set up shop and peacefully express their opinion in a designated area, then, you know, this legal theory may very well end up getting expanded to the socials. And it's a classic example of being hoist by your own petard, because something that the liberals wanted 3 decades ago, and a door they opened by pushing this, and progressive California took the bait, and we enshrined it in our Constitution, and the Supreme Court gave it a stamp of approval, and it's the law in a number of states in the U.S. now. I see this as being the perfect legal theory by which people like Crowder and others who have been pushed out, who have been banned from Facebook, who have been taken down, they're effectively banned from public discourse. A handful of companies, Google, Facebook, a couple others, can basically make you invisible. And traditional terrestrial radio and television is no longer the bulk of where people listen and exchange and hear ideas. And for our democracy to survive, I don't know. This may be a way to this. It may very well happen, folks. And if it does, I'll be back here to remind you of the segment. But I think it's a very, very dangerous thing for YouTube and for Google and for all these companies to do, because their position basically ought to be we're not going to police this. We're not here to be hall monitors. We provide a medium for speech. If it violates the law, we will turn over, right, our whatever we have to the authorities when we get a relevant subpoena. And if you don't like something, don't watch it. Case closed. But here is where the corporate interests, right, these are big corporations, are selling us a bill of goods. They're telling us that they're out there looking out for the little guy, looking out for the interests of the hurt individual, but really they're just caving to another big corporation that's using its loud megaphone to scream and shout at them. And that's wrong. And in the long run, I think a desperately failed business strategy. All right, when we come back, Attorney General Bill Barr gave an interview that was just absolutely fantastic. Also, it has developed into a conversation more broadly about the fortunes of President Trump, and I think they're quite good. I will explain all of this when we come back. Don't go anywhere.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth? Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rojofsky here. Did you see this week? The Washington Post had to, through gritted teeth, had to admit that Mexico proposed sending 6,000 troops to its southern border with Guatemala. And then subsequently, we learned that actually Mexican troops began detaining some of the organizers of the caravan. And so in so doing, fulfilling the demands that Trump was making as part of his 25% tariff. You know, literally one day before, we had everyone in the media, even the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, was telling us how there is just no appetite for tariffs against Mexico, and that this would lead to a fruitless disruption of relations between the two countries. Now, it's clearly the product of Trump being frustrated. I understand that, right? Congress isn't doing anything. We're not appropriating any more money for the walls. They're not appropriating any money for the shelters. The clear objective, right, with Congress refusing to fund these items is for illegals to be released into the country. That is the objective, right? When you have Ilhan Omar out there saying, I want ICE to be abolished, it is un-American to detain illegal immigrants crossing the border. Why don't we just take her at her word and accept that that is what the Democratic Party wants? Why are we looking past statements, her statements and similar statements by others in her caucus? You know, in other words, Trump in the executive branch can levy tariffs. And Congress, as the appropriator, as the legislative branch that holds the purse strings, can withhold funding. So they're withholding funding from Trump's agenda. What tools, what affirmative actions can he take as president? Really, tariffs is one of them. He can punish the country that really ought to be the stopgap and that has been, you know, Mexico doesn't want these guys hanging out. They don't want the caravan staying one day longer than they need to. So Mexico has been slyly, not so slyly, aiding these caravans and letting them flow through the country. One important thing that came out of all this, and it was a line in one article, I believe in the Washington Post, where it said it acknowledged also for the first time from a mainstream media outlet that there were significant American funds or funds that were sourced from America that were being sent down to Mexico to fund the caravan. And one of the demands that Trump had was to stop the flow of those funds. So who do you think is sending that money down there? Of course. And it's not just mom and pop well-meaning leftists, but who actually wants a flood of illegal immigrants in this country? George Soros, for political reasons. I also think there's the people that gain from this, big corporations. And the irony is you Democrats are getting played. You think you're Yeah, I know Democrats are out there to do social engineering, but what they're really doing, what you're really doing is driving down labor rates for big companies, which is what they want. And you're screwing your base. You're screwing your blue collar base and you're driving those people to Trump. Every million illegal immigrants that come into this country is another million jobs that are wages will be displaced or depressed. And those are people who are eventually going to, if they haven't already, had enough with their blind generational loyalty to the Democratic Party. Now, Bill Barr on Friday had this with the CBS this morning with Jan Crawford, have put out an interview with Bill Barr. This is the one where he channeled his inner Dick Cheney. He looked like he was going fishing. And I spell that N apostrophe, right? Fishing. He looked like he was like in his cabin somewhere. I don't know what that was all about. Maybe Bill Barr has a part-time job as a model for the Eddie Bauer catalog. I don't know. But at any rate, there were a massive amount of gems that came out of it. Note one thing. CBS has yet to release the full version of the interview or even an edited continuous version of the interview. What they have done is they've released it in these obnoxious little segments. And I always think, you know, when you break up an interview like this, you're doing it because it didn't go as planned. I think Jan Crawford thought she was going to play a game of gotcha with Barr, and in the end, it was quite the other way around. Now, the thrust of the efforts, or CBS's efforts to get Barr, were based on Trump damaging this country, right? That was the one part of it. And then the other part that Barr is just the president's defense attorney. Right, because basically what their Democrats were trying to do right now is taint Barr as somehow not an attorney general, but being really a personal counsel to the president, protecting the president. And by doing so is only allowing the president to further erode our institutions. That is the gist, the thrust of the argument against Barr. So here is what Crawford asks him about being the president's personal attorney. She asks him, so when you see some of the criticism, and you've gotten quite a bit of that, you're protecting or enabling the president. What's your response to that?
We live in a hyperpartisan age where people no longer really pay attention to the substance of what's said, but as to who says it and what side they're on and what its political ramifications are. The Department of Justice is all about the law and the facts and the substance, and I'm going to make the decisions based on the law and the facts, and I realize that's in tension with the political climate we live in because people are more interested in getting their way politically. So I think it just goes with the territory of being attorney general in a hyperpartisan period of time.
Perfectly said. Now, I'm going to tell you the important parts of this. Now, he was just unflappable the whole time. All the bits and pieces I've seen of this interview, Barr is even keel. And he doesn't break a sweat. And it's, by the way, a very important quality as an attorney. You don't let things get to you. So here's the line that I love. The Department of Justice is all about the law, the facts, and the substance. And I'm going to make decisions based on law and the facts. That's it. And he says, look, people are going to criticize me because this approach is in tension with the political climate we live in. It doesn't correspond. People want me to be political. I'm not here to be political. There was a line somewhere in it where he's not afraid to contradict Trump, by the way. You know, they asked him, Trump is saying that Comey's a traitor, that he committed treason. And Barr says, well, I'm an attorney, and as attorney general, I'm only interested in what the law says about treason. And treason has certain standards that have to be met. And I don't think they were met here. So what are you really asking me? So you disagree with the president? Well, the president's being rhetorical. The answer is here, Trump's being political and Barr is not. And the more that the Democrats try to bring Barr into the mud, the harder of a time they're going to have because I'll explain more about this as we continue, because Barr, meanwhile, is the guy who is pressing for a factual and legal takedown of this whole effort to get Trump politically. And so the more they fight Barr on this, the more they try to bring him into the mud, it's just going to keep backfiring. This was Barr explaining how it's not Trump that's shredding our institutions.
I think one of the ironies today is that people are saying that it's President Trump that's shredding our institutions. I really see no evidence of that. It's hard for, and I really haven't seen a bill of particulars as to how that's being done. From my perspective, the idea of resisting a democratically elected president and basically throwing everything at him and really changing the norms on the grounds that we have to stop this president, that's where the shredding of our norms and our institutions is occurring.
Bingo. Exactly. And the resistance effort started, I would argue, weeks before Trump was actually elected president and went into full bloom after the election. Now, one of the things that I have noticed this week that I need to pass on to you is that there is a change in tone among the left-wing anti-Trump folks here who I would say these are the people who, you know, let's say a year ago were openly mocking Trump for saying that his phones were tapped, his wire, you know, he was being spied on in Trump Tower. They were mocking him. They were claiming that he would be indicted or impeached or whatnot. And one of these guys who's been at the forefront of this, Philip Mudd, he's a former analyst for the CIA. He does all the rounds on CNN. and elsewhere. And he was on with Don Lemon on Tuesday on CNN, big anti-Trump guy. And tell me if you don't sense some change in tone from Mr. Mudd.
There's one other issue nobody talks about, Don, that's important here, and that is eventually the FBI and the Department of Justice are going to conclude the investigations to how this investigation itself was initiated.
Right.
I'm going to predict to you that that is going to go ugly early. In other words, the Democrats have a clock ticking. If they can't get things underway before the Department of Justice says, here's our report on how the investigation was initiated, they're in trouble, because the Department of Justice, I'm going to tell you, is going to say, when this thing got started about the Trump campaign, it was pretty ugly. And then we're off to the races. The White House will have some real ammo.
Panic. Panic. Full on panic. You know, when you've got the Attorney General right now saying, I'm sticking to the law and the facts, and the left is shrieking about him being a partisan, and you've got Comey, who can't keep off of Twitter. You know, Comey would always criticize Trump for being a blowhard and this and that. Comey is out there left and right saying things that are largely incoherent and completely emotional. And I bring this up because this was one of his tweets. Let's see, on Saturday. James Comey tweets, Bill Barr on CBS offers no facts. An AG should not be echoing conspiracy theories. He should gather facts and show them. That is what justice, meaning the Justice Department, is about. Now, I would argue what the Justice Department is about is to offer no details on any ongoing investigation. That it's not the purpose of an attorney general to begin airing out anything before an investigation is completed and handed over for some type of prosecution. And that, I think Comey could have heeded that advice when he was FBI director. Nonetheless, the fact that Bill Barr's offering, you see this, Comey's actually getting, he's a target of an investigation. And he is tweeting out about the man who is the boss, the direct supervisor of the man who is actively investigating him. This, folks, is so dumb. Do not take my word for this. Comey's lawyer must be telling him on some level, be quiet. The fact that Comey can't help himself tells me that he is in an emotionally frayed, frail state of mind. And there are other characters in this saga that are in the same place. Take, for example, Christopher Steele. A fascinating discourse, again, on Don Lemon on CNN, where they're talking about all this. Matt Rosenberg from The New York Times says this about Christopher Steele, being afraid he's going to get thrown under the bus. Listen closely.
I mean, he is incredibly concerned, maybe obsessed, that this investigation is going to throw him under the bus. And his view, at least according to people close to him, is, look, I was working on this dossier other people were paying for. I saw things that the Democrats were paying for. I saw things that seemed frightening to me and alarming. I went to old contacts of the FBI to tell them. I wasn't a paid source in this case. That's his view of it, and that he was simply helping them out, and what they did with it, if they misused it in a FISA or whatever they did, he had nothing to do with that, which is to a degree true. He's not part of that process. He was simply a source of information, and I think he's acutely concerned that he's going to be thrown under the bus here.
So here's what I did, I'm coming at this as a European, son of my father, born in 1941. Student of history. This sounds like, it sounds like panic. Also sounds like these guys are worried the tide is turning, and now they're scrambling to just say, we're following orders. I just got paid to put together this dossier. You know, I put some stuff together. What they did with it, I don't want to know. I just loaded some people on trains. I just put them on the train. I put them off the train. That's it. I was just paid to do it. What happened with those people? I mean, this is absurd. This is not the measure of criminal culpability. There are standards. And this from the people who were so reckless in their accusations against the president. Without any proof, without any real evidence. These people ran around for 2 years saying with certainty that Trump was a criminal and ought to be indicted. Saying with certainty that Trump was a traitor. Saying with certainty that he colluded with Russia. Saying with certainty that the Mueller report would completely lay bare Trump's many criminal schemes. And then come up short. And now they're saying, I only did this little part. I only did this little thing. But these people, this was a conspiracy. And conspiracy law, again, let me put on my lawyer hat, doesn't require you to have been a participant in the entire process from start to finish. You can play a role. And this the framework of this law was laid down, and it's why I bring up the Holocaust. It's not to make light of the Holocaust. I bring it up because that is our post-war standard for what a criminal conspiracy really can consist of in its broadest sense. And we use this type of conspiracy law to convict criminals all the time. So the fact that Christopher Steele only played one little part in it, and even if you take him 100% at his word that all he did was produce some fake report, he saw what it was being used for. He knew all the players involved. He got paid. And then he said nothing when that report was used to further the investigation against the president. He's in real trouble. Real trouble. And what will happen is these people will start to roll because there is no honor among thieves. And this whole criminal enterprise is going to come tumbling down. It'll happen quicker than you even imagine. And so to Philip Mudd's point that the White House will have some real ammo, yes. And I will add my point to this now. Timing, because all of this will be laid bare in this year and change before the election. And it is an enormous X factor because Trump will get credit for some of the he will get an excuse for some of the headwind that he's encountered as a result of all of this. I'll explain more about that when I come back. So just bear with me here. Plowing through the Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Well, I have this funny segment I needed to get off my chest. A Louisiana principal from a Catholic school, Holy Family School in Louisiana, named Michael Comeau, was arrested on Thursday, May 30th in Washington, D.C., passed out at a strip club. Yeah. So he's there on a school field trip. The students apparently were all neatly tucked away in their hotel rooms. And this guy was out and about in D.C. Now, my understanding is, and I don't see this in this article that I printed here, it's here. Numerous sources told Nine News investigators Comeau, the principal, had a service dog with him at the bar strip club. So the guy's a principal, Catholic principal. He goes to a strip club during a school trip and brings a service dog, proceeds to get drunk with said service dog and arrested. I don't know if they arrested the service dog. I also kind of assume that, well, I mean, of all the things for a Catholic high school principal to be doing, being at a strip club, I think, would probably be among the safest. I had to. But he also worked, Robbie, you'll like this. He worked as a part-time reserve police officer for the Brusly Police Department. That's somewhere near Baton Rouge. So he did resign by text message early Friday morning. Yeah, they give you, now they give you, instead of one call from jail, they give you one text from jail. So the Diocese of Baton Rouge released a statement saying that they were confirming that Michael Comeau, the principal at Holy Family School in Port Allen, was arrested. While on a school-sponsored trip, the incident occurred when the students on the trip were in their hotel rooms for the evening, under the supervision of other chaperones. That's funny. I also think there was a great story. I'm not going to get into the details of the story, but I will. Well, hold on. I'm pulling it up right now. I'm just going to read you the headline. That's all I'm going to do. Just the headline. The New York Post, there's two people, I have no idea who they are, but apparently they're famous in reality TV. New York Post reported that Marsha Cross's anal cancer likely was linked to her husband's throat cancer through HPV. And I will let that headline speak for itself. Sam Rejofsky, back right after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Guess who is not liking Nancy Pelosi's lock him up comments about Trump? Well, it's not just conservative commentators and Sam Nation. MSNBC host Ari Melber on Thursday said this about Nancy Pelosi and what she's been running around saying.
Is this the Democrats' version of lock her up? I mean, there was a judicial legal process. We've covered it extensively. It did not result in an indictment, whether you like it or not. The next step would be, does Congress want to deal with it? And if the speaker doesn't want to go that route, she has every right to explain that. But if she doesn't want to go that route and then she is making prison-esque, jail-esque references, does she risk, I ask for your analysis, does she risk getting close to a lock-her-up kind of frame where you're using the impunity of criminal conduct without actually responsibly dealing with the evidence?
Well, let me explain this to you, Mr. Melber. The speaker doesn't want to go that route. The speaker does not want impeachment because she's not going to get it. Nancy Pelosi knows that she's got nothing. You know, if... And she doesn't want to explain it either. And the reason she doesn't want to explain it is mostly financial, right? I mean, they're basically needing to fundraise right now at a critical time for the general election for congressional races. This is her job. I talk about this all the time. She's got to raise money. She's raising money off of defeating Trump. This is Nancy Pelosi being clever. Right. Trump is criticizing her for being an idiot, maybe, but this is her being clever. She can't talk about impeachment and not do it anymore. So now she's going to say, lock him up. And it feeds the frenzy of her base, the desires of the party faithful to have Trump trussed up like a turkey. It's not going to happen. It's a fiction. But she's got to put it out there. But she can't keep talking about impeachment and not have it happen. There really broadly in Congress, impeachment's not going to happen. I mean, you're not even getting the impeachment process started, and she recognizes it. Yeah, it's kind of like if you're in a life or death struggle, which I think the Democrats are right now politically, and you have a loaded gun, you don't threaten to shoot. You only threaten to shoot when you don't have a loaded gun. There are literally no bullets in the gun. So you're just saying, stop or I'm going to shoot you. Well, I want to lock him up. I want to put him in. I don't want to impeach him. I want to put him in jail. But notice how even reliable foot soldiers of the left are turning on it. And you'll see this in the media. And it's a mess. It's a wide open field. Anything can happen at this point. But the advantages to Trump in all of this, the advantages to Trump. So I know, I gotcha. It's happening. Who is the voice of the Democratic Party right now? Who's the voice of the Democratic Party? I would argue that it's AOC, right? It's these. You hear more from her. You hear more from Rashida Tlaib. You hear more from Ilhan Omar. You're hearing from these fringe members of the party. And when I look at cable news, it's them. And then as far as the candidates go, I mean, Buttigieg is a nice guy, you know, gives good sound bites, but got a lot of Bernie out there, too, looking pretty crazy. These are the people that are supposed to inspire the opposition to Trump to now coalesce behind an idea, because they're out of their various lines of attack against him. So now it's going to be about what's their idea. And the best Biden can do is keep plagiarizing things. I don't know if you heard this. His whole climate proposal was lifted from somebody else, or most of it lifted. He's the guy who plagiarized in law school and other. It's like watching some sort of a race where somebody has got the other side has a handicap, and it's going to be a great view. By the way, I will tell you, I have one article. I'm going to get to this here really quickly because I love it. You know, the Chernobyl, the documentary, or the miniseries on HBO. There's the two things that one, it was an unexpected hit. I talked to you about, we spoke about this a few weeks ago. The show was an unexpected hit. And I'm going to tell you one other thing. It was an unexpected hit all over the world. I don't know if you realize this. But it was such a hit that, you know, I follow the Czech newspapers, and I won't read this to you because it's in Czech. But I took a moment to read it, and I loved it because the title caught my interest. It said something about people of color being at Chernobyl, and I guess there was a lady in Great Britain, some social justice warrior who went out and said, how come there are no people of color in this documentary? And I didn't know if maybe radiation burns counted as color. But at any rate, all the people in Eastern Europe, right? All the people in the Ukraine go, what are you talking about? Because people of color, I think for the most part, means blacks, right? Or that type of color, right? Not just people that are pink or whatnot. So there were no blacks. And guess what? The enterprising author in this Czech article found one black member of the Red Guard, the army unit that was there. Look, I got a picture. See, Robbie? They actually found him. So to her point, the documentary failed to incorporate the one person of color that worked on the Chernobyl rescue unit. What was his name here? Oh, I should have underlined this. He had a kind of a funny name. Well, at any rate, there was one guy. I will say one other thing about Chernobyl. The Russians are livid about it. They are livid. I don't know if you saw this, but they don't like the HBO documentary one bit. Fake news, say the Russians, and they are going to make their own documentary now that explains how it happened. I think they're going to blame the CIA or whatnot. This is great, great, great stuff. So I like the documentary. If you haven't seen it, watch it. I think it's a good 5 episodes, right? Yeah, goes by pretty quick, and I don't think you'll be disappointed. Have a wonderful weekend. I'm going to start summer early here, get to my kids. But I really appreciate you all for being here, and see you back here next Friday. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, over and out.